I have three more people. I want up here Cindy Hunt, please, and Julie. And Gary. Cindy, we would have called upon you to explain to us the legislative council's opinion on the constitutionality of the bill. Can you do that for us?
Yes. Senator Starr, I was called into another committee meeting, so I haven't been able to monitor this committee as closely as I would have liked. But it's my understanding that the constitutional issue that everyone is the most concerned about is the first part of the opinion dealing with the establishment clause and not the other four parts dealing with other constitutional provisions. Correct, and that's what you'd like me to focus on.
That's correct.
Right, okay. Basically, what my opinion was based on, and I think as the opinion says, is that in Oregon, the courts have not looked at a case involving money going to students who attend post-secondary institutions or public monies going to post-secondary institutions. And so any opinion in this case is speculative based on Oregon case law going out over 30 years or so. Also, the opinion was based on the fact that the Student Bill of Rights program, as it's structured, gives money to regionally accredited nonprofit private institutions, which is the same institutions that many of our student assistance statutes give money to, and because the language is exactly the same. And those statutes have been around for about 30 years and have never been challenged at the appellate level. So looking at the case law, basically we're applying our best guess. And so in the most recent cases on the Establishment Clause, and when I say the most recent, I mean one from the mid-80s, so it's been about 15 years in this area, the Oregon court applied what we call the Lemon Test, which is sort of a federal standard. They look to the federal courts. And even though they're applying their own standards, because the Oregon Constitution has a stricter establishment clause than the federal, they still applied some of the federal reasoning. So in the opinion, that's why I look to federal cases, not that they would be absolute authority, but they are an indication of how the Oregon courts may view this. And in fact, there was a case more recently out of Washington that the U.S. Supreme Court looked at, and in that case, money was being given to people in vocational technical programs to seek post-secondary education, and this one individual received the money and decided to study theology at a religious school. And the court upheld the program because basically, when you look at the whole program, that was one person, and it was his choice. The state wasn't endorsing his religion. So all of this factored into our opinion. And so in looking at this, when you're looking at post-secondary institutions, they... the cases in Oregon have focused on kindergarten through grade 12 private schools and institutions, which are more religious in character. When looking at the post-secondary institutions, they're less religious, and that's what, from across the country, the cases have been holding. So in issuing our opinion, I think that clearly says it's speculative in nature, etc. It's our opinion that, viewing all of this together, that the Student Bill of Rights bill, the Oregon courts would say that it was constitutional. There you go.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Questions?
No questions. Did good.
Mr. Chair, I think that means that we all read the opinion from Legislative Council.
Well, so we have dueling attorney opinions here.
That we do.
Okay.
Well, Senator Castillo, Mr. Chair, it's not surprising because this area, the law is an area that the cases are, well, frequently very complex. Like I said, in Oregon, I mean, we haven't had a case for 15 years. I mean, so, and this is a new area for the Oregon court, so it's not surprising that there would be differing opinions.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chair.
Senator
Decker. Washington and Minnesota have similar statutes that withstood legal challenge. Correct, sir.
Senator Decker, Mr. Chair, I'm not certain. I didn't encounter any case law on those.
On those two.
I mean, I'm speaking from Oregon, which I did do research in Oregon to see if our student assistance statutes had ever been challenged, you know, as a possible source of authority, you know, in interpreting this. And those had not. And I also looked to see, because I've been told that some of our school districts have similar agreements with private institutions. So I looked to see if any of those had been challenged as well, and I did not find any case law surrounding that.
Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Gary Carlson with Associated Oregon Industries, and Julie Brandis is here also from our organization today. I've just got a few comments with regard to the testimony that's been given in the background of development of this bill. As you know, we brought this bill in last legislative Senate session, Senate Bill 428. The bill ultimately passed the legislature, was vetoed by the governor. And the primary concern that the governor had, I believe, is met in this bill. And that was the potential fiscal impacts on the school districts. The cap, I think, is the key that addresses that issue. To cap the number of students, the number of actual courses that can be given, allowed under this measure. And it's a four or five-year cap, as you know. So you have a chance as the legislature to evaluate the workings of this bill before that sunset occurs. We're more than willing to go along with that in order to see this legislation implemented. As you know, this legislation has been implemented in 22 states. It's not a new idea. It is another option for students. Most students do not leave the high school. Students who participate will typically take one or two courses based on experience in many of these other states. And I know some of you are probably asking, well, why is the business organization interested in this bill or education generally? We've had a great deal of involvement in education for the last 12 or 13 years. In the state, we have supported with our testimony and effort for the last several sessions full funding of the Head Start program, for example. We want to see this program available for all students, and I think the language on page 10 of the bill giving priority to at-risk students when the cap is in place is good legislation. I think that is appropriate. In good legislation, we support it. This bill, I think, will make more available, if you will, these kinds of programs statewide. And you've heard testimony on both sides of this or all around this issue. Yes, it is available generally. No, it's not available generally. We think this program is an adjunct to what's going on in the state right now. We think what's going on now is good. We'd like to see more of it. We think this program will make those opportunities, additional opportunities, available to the students in the state. Well, why are we interested in education? Every time we talk to our members about what concerns them, several issues come up. The typical business issues of taxes and regulation are always there right at the top of the list, but education is right near the top of the list as well. Businesses are concerned about the level of academic achievement of the students that they see coming in their door asking for a job, and they want to see that improved. They want to see the educational achievement improve, and they think that this is one way that we can bootstrap the programs that we have now to accelerate the educational achievement of students and make them more productive. Better citizens because of that additional capability that they have through the educational opportunities afforded by this bill. That's why we support this bill, and we hope that you will today as well. And with that, I'd like to ask Julie if she has anything additional to add.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Julie Brandis with Associated Oregon Industries.
Just a bit of review. The expanded options program places the student in a position where he or she can steer her education program in the 11th and 12th grade, or if he or she is 16 years old. We looked at the joint board study that came out, I think it was in 1998, that advocated for developing a statewide program related to expanding options. We recognize that many school districts have programs, but we also recognize that there's difference not only between school districts, but within school districts. Last session, as Gary stated, the legislation did pass. It was vetoed by the governor. Originally, this legislation was designed, last session, was designed after Minnesota's program. But through the efforts of Senator Gorley and Gene Thorne from the governor's office, like the 22 other states that have legislation like this, we have created one that is an Oregon plan. This bill is different than what passed last session. We have worked to include language that prioritizes at-risk students. We have better defined acceptable schools. We have placed in a financial cap and a reimbursement cap. And in the last week, we have worked with the community colleges to design language to better meet their needs. We feel this is a good piece of legislation, improved, and we look forward to your support.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, and thank you to both Ms. Brandes and Mr. Carlson for their participation in the work group and for working, I keep using the word constructive, but working in a very constructive way with my office. We appreciate it very much. Question for you. We've heard testimony today that stated that the policy contained in Senate Bill 783 is a voucher. We also heard testimony that raised the concern about the possible loss of basic school support. We heard that testimony that in Minnesota, they've had the experience of a $17.5 million loss in basic school support. Would you please reflect on that testimony, which I know you were in the room to hear, and just provide your comments and your perspective on, one, the voucher issue concern, and then the basic school support question.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Julie Brandes. On the voucher issue, no, we do not believe this is a voucher. We see this as building on programs that already do exist. We have heard the school districts say these programs already do exist. We are just putting the ability for the decision to be made within the students' hands. We have heard from one of the people from the Department of Education, that some schools are already, or maybe it was Ms. Hunt, I don't know, some school districts are already providing programs for their students to go to a private institution. We've heard that this also exists for scholarship programs. So no, we do not see this as a voucher at all.
Ms. Chair, Senator Gordley, on the issue of costs, in the last legislative session, Steve Bender in Legislative Fiscal estimated that based on experience in other states, in the 1999-2001 biennium, he would have estimated about $3.5 million cost to the K-12 school system as a result of this legislation, which is about 1/1,000th of the appropriated dollars for the K-12 system, about 1/10th. Of 1%. The other point I'd like to make on the subject is that there are 25% of students not making it to the walk across the gymnasium floor to accept that diploma. 25%. It is our hope and our expectation that some of these students who are dropping out because the high school experience has not served them well will choose to stay in the educational system as a result of this bill and bring dollars back into some of these schools and get more students on a track to achieve a diploma than currently is the case. And with those two points, I think it rests our primary concern about the dropout issue, about the need to bring these kids back in, and about the cost to the system.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the testimony. We have the bill is in work session. We have the -6 amendments. Chair would entertain.
Want me to make Amanda's point?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Amanda Rich from the Oregon Community College Association, just wanted to come up and make a point that with the -6 amendments, they're neutral. Is that correct?
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. It's on the record.
Mr. Chair?
Members of the committee, I just don't want you to overlook the -5 amendments. They were handed out at the prior meeting. They're from Senator Deckert, and we didn't talk about them at the last meeting, and they do two things. They would allow smaller school districts to opt out of the provisions of the program, and also would direct that the school district would pay the college, community college, half the amount owed when the student enrolls, and then the remaining half upon successful completion by the student. And I just didn't want this to be overlooked.
Thank you, Jan.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gordley.
If you're ready for a motion.
I'm ready for a motion.
For the record, Mr. Chair, I am withdrawing the -1, -3, and -4 amendments, which were earlier offered by my office. And I move the -6 amendment to Senate Bill 783.
Senator Gordley has moved the -6 amendments to Senate Bill 783. Any further discussion? Any opposition?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo.
I cannot support that.
Senator Castillo cannot support that, and Senator Deckert not supporting either. Let's just have the clerk call the roll.
Just a moment, Frank.
Just a moment.
No.
Aye.
Gordley?
Aye. No.
Aye.
Having received the necessary votes, the -6 amendments have been adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 783 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley has moved Senate Bill 783 as amended with -6 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
No.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 783 has moved the floor at the due pass recommendation. Open public hearing.
Yes.
Senator Gordley will carry the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2291.
Right.
And
Representative
Ryan,
thank you for being engaged.
Oh,
in the way that you are. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Need these come up in the group?
Yes.
Wow. Kristen Dobley, Sandra Sheets, Dave Barris, Michael. Oh, I'm just sorry. Dave, you come not here. Dave is not here. How about Michael Shiwi?
Chairman.
Yes.
Good evening. For the record, I'm Representative Chris Beck, House District 12. I'm here to bring some, introduce some of my constituents to you. Before I get started, this bill was sponsored by Representative Schrader and Representative Lowe. Do you want them here to explain the bill, or would you like me to take my crack at their intent, since it's not really my bill?
We will try to reach them. I think that we've read the very short bill.
It's a short bill.
Got some idea of intent.
May I proceed then?
You may proceed with your testimony, introduction of your...
I will do that and try to provide a little bit of background. The original bill was introduced as a result of a situation in Oregon City where Riverdale School District had entertained setting up a school facility outside of their own district boundary against the wishes of the Oregon City School District. And I think this bill was introduced as an effort to discourage one school district from siting a facility outside of its own boundaries unless they had permission from the host school district. And that was the genesis of this bill from Oregon City legislators. Since that legislation was conceived and introduced, the situation has changed a little bit, and Riverdale School District has negotiated an agreement with the approval of the Portland School District and has, in the process of trying to site their high school within the Southwest Portland neighborhood, the Collinsview neighborhood, which I represent. I also represent the Riverdale School District, so I'm here on behalf of a handful of Riverdale residents and a handful of, actually quite a few, Southwest Portland residents who are opposed to the current agreement that has been approved by the Portland School District to sell property and a school site in Southwest Portland. This bill does not address the concerns of my constituents, and they are here today to explain to you the situation and to seek your indulgence to work on some amendments that will try to address the situation that is currently going on in Portland. In a sense, the reason the bill was introduced is not the problem, which it was trying to solve, is gone, and that problem has now shifted to Southwest Portland, and so I am here seeking some appropriate remedy in this bill. To just give you a little more background, the Portland School District has entered into an agreement with the Riverdale School District to site a public high school, Riverdale High School, within Southwest Portland, outside of the Riverdale District boundary. The arrangement between the two school districts only allows 75 Portland residents, Portland children, to attend the Riverdale High School. Additionally, those 75 children cannot attend Riverdale unless they pay private tuition. There is no open enrollment agreement between the school districts. And Portland School Board will not transfer ADMW money with their students, the 75 students that they will allow to go to Riverdale. So in a sense, Portland is allowing a school to open within its boundary, a public school, but it is preventing Portland people from attending that school unless they can afford private tuition, which is estimated to be about $8,000 to $9,000 a year. We tried to address this situation with the Portland School Board this winter. I have a letter signed by 16 legislators to the Portland School Board asking them to rethink this arrangement or to establish an open enrollment provision, but the school board chose to go their own route and has not paid much attention to either the local citizens or the legislators who signed this letter. So we're here down in Salem to seek some improvements to the bill that's already been approved, and I'll let my constituents introduce themselves and tell you a little bit more about the situation and go from there.
Thank you.
Senator Starr and other members of the committee, I'm happy to be here today. It's a little wait, but I'm sure it's worth it for me. Thank you for the courtesy of listening. My name is Kirsten Dobley. I live in Portland. I'm an educator, and I'm currently a doctoral student at OSU. And I am very proud that the legislature is making education a priority. And I wanted you to consider some additional problems and issues that are embedded in this situation. The issues are fairness and equality and access to public school education. And I would just like to mention that I've been a resident of this neighborhood for 38 years, and the access for that neighborhood school was very important. And for those of you that have lived in an area where you had a neighborhood school, you either remember or you know now that a neighborhood school is very important to, as a focal point for the community. The situation has now been drastically altered. If Riverdale School District is allowed to have their public school within the boundaries of the Portland School District, because the students who live there, who live around where their school might be, will be forced to pay an exorbitant amount of tuition to attend there. This does not seem fair to me, and I don't see where the equality is. So I have a big question for you, and I respect the fact that you have jurisdiction in this issue, but it also has to do with boundaries of school districts, so it's very complex. Should a public school district be allowed to charge tuition to students who live in the boundaries of the neighborhood in which the school is located? If the school district sites their school within the boundaries of another school district. See what I mean about this being very complex? For example, this is just a hypothetical example. Say, for example, Albany School District needed a building for a school. They have increased enrollment, so they need a building. The Corvallis School District has an empty building. So Albany opens a new high school in a Corvallis building and charges tuition to the students who live in that Corvallis neighborhood. That is a hypothetical situation that is similar to this situation. Another example, Mount Angel or Independence School District opening an elementary, middle, or high school in Salem and then charging tuition to Salem students who live across the street. That's the situation that we are in here. So the smaller question is, do we now have a way to distinguish what we mean when we say public school or private school? Can a public school just decide to charge tuition to anyone they want to? Because that would be the situation for students that live in the neighborhood where this school may be located. Imagine moving to an area. Someone from out of town moves to Portland or moves to any other area in Oregon because of the great public education that is offered there. And there's a public school there. and then they find out after they move there that they cannot attend that school without paying tuition. That is the situation that we are facing in this part of Portland, if someone wanted to move there and attend that high school. So is this equal opportunity for all students? I'm asking that question. Representative Beck has taken responsibility for this issue here in the legislature, and he and you are specialists in education matters, in education policy domains, and so you can provide cues and advice to the other legislators if this comes before them. But I just want you to know that there are many taxpayers in Portland who would not want one group of our public school students favored over another. And I would say that these issues that I've brought before you are very germane and have merit. You play a very critical role in looking at this bill and the issues that are embedded in it, which I've brought before you. And your committee can take a very strong stand if you want to, against unfairness. And you can help shape this legislation so that there are no bad precedents that are set for other school districts in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me just a moment. We have two representatives here who sponsored this bill. If you would just step back on the front row there for a moment and let Representative Lowe and Representative Schrader come forward and present their testimony. We'll have you right back up. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Senator Starr, Mr. Chairman, and committee members. It's wonderful to be here. We present to you the House Bill 2291, affectionately known as the Riverdale Bill. This bill was begun by the good representative from Kennedy and myself, because Riverdale School District purchased, unbeknownst to the citizens of Oregon City, or had an option to purchase a piece of property in the heart of the Oregon City School District. Representative Schrader and I share constituencies who attend that school district. The plan was to build a high school to accommodate 400 or more students and to solicit participation and send invitations out to the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme of the students in the surrounding areas to attend this high school. They only need accommodate 50 of their own students. And when Oregon City learned of their plight and their need for space, we offered to let them build onto an existing school building that we had, and we were more than willing to accommodate them. But they did not want their children to mix with our children. And when they sent out invitations to other children in our school district to attend theirs to make their school profitable, they wouldn't accept just any child. They only wanted certain children. When the parents of the school district found out that their children would have to pay a very large tuition to attend the Riverdale School while driving right past that building, it caused a considerable uproar in my community. We had many hearings, and the parents and the citizens of my community began to realize that what was going on would weaken the school district that we had. It would take away kids that would score well on the test scores that our school has to pass. It would take away kids whose parents are very supportive of the schools and cause them to have split loyalties or send their loyalties elsewhere. And it would leave the tougher to educate kids behind for the public school in Oregon City to educate. This was very unfair. And so 2291 simply mandates good manners. If a school district needs to invade another school district to set up a school there, they have to ask the host district for permission. It's just ordinary good manners, written permission. And if they don't get it, then there are consequences that will fall to the invader. It doesn't seem right that we would have to legislate good manners, but we did. And that's why this bill is before you. I do understand that Representative Beck has some amendments, and I'm not fighting him on those amendments. Whatever is the pleasure of this committee, I'm happy to do. But I would ask you to at least pass out 2291 into law. I appreciate your attention, and I await your questions.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Representative Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Representative Kurt Schrader from House District 23. At the opportunity of co-sponsoring this bill, Representative Lowe, she's correct, we do share this school district, and she did an excellent job, incredulous as it may seem, in outlining some of the concerns that became apparent to us with the citizens of our district. I won't belabor that. It's a real simple bill. It's a fairness bill. It's a bill that shouldn't have to even be here. I think 150 years ago when we set up this state, it was just common courtesy that, you know, if you had a school district, you wanted to build a school someplace else, that's fine. Feel free to do it. But you check in with your neighbor. That's the way it was going to be. You wouldn't just walk into the backyard and do something on their property in their neighborhood that, without them knowing about it. It's like what we do here. We talk to each other before, you know, we talk on someone else's bill. It's common courtesy. And apparently that common courtesy has been lost over the years, and this particular school district, which has felt itself, frankly, a bit above the rest of Oregonians. They refused to try and unify. Everyone else had to unify. They are the same district that was double-dipping that we learned about back in 97 and 95 sessions onto state school funds. Several types of, in my opinion, fairly egregious activities that the good representative from Oregon City has alluded to. It's a problem, and I think it's an opportunity for us, without being overly punitive. We took out some language that the good representative and I were interested in doing because of, I think, their overt activities in our backyard. And have narrowed this bill down to a very straightforward, please ask permission before you come into the school district and get it. And that's simple. I mean, that's just common courtesy. So I think that's where we're at on this. It's not a big issue that's going to raise the roof or go home and say you've done the great and worldly things. But when you have moms coming to us, talking about their sense of community and worried about how Oregon High School is going to survive, how their Redland Elementary School is going to survive, if this thing comes in and all of a sudden we have all sorts of other issues going on, it's a sense of community, a sense of pride, and a sense of fairness. And so we've tried to make it very simple, very straightforward, legislate a little common courtesy, and hopefully have good school systems that make good communities in our future. So I hope you consider this favorably. Thank you.
Any questions?
I just have one, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Decker.
Thank you. I'm not sure, but it looks like Representative
Senator Starr and Representative Decker. Yes, I'm trying to keep up with the image of the Senate. Someday, maybe that, you know, we have to
cowboy hat.
Keep up with
Mr. Chairman. Over there. Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
I have a question for Representative Schrader. Did they charge you for that haircut?
I actually went to a dang salon. Ernie was closed over the weekend.
My question is a little different. To me, this is an issue of courtesy, but it's an issue of local control.
Most definitely, Senator.
Is that how you view this?
Exactly correct.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And now we'll have the former two witnesses return, please.
My name is Sandra Sheets. I'm a resident of Southwest Portland in the Collinsview neighborhood. Senator Starr and committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you. I am very much in favor of Senate Bill 2291.
but I feel strongly that it does not go far enough to encourage public education in the true sense that we all believe in. This bill needs to assure that schools will not attempt to locate within another district's boundaries and then charge tuition to over half of its students because they come from the hosting district or a neighboring district. We must support and encourage open enrollment with the unrestricted availability of inter-district transfers with accompanying state funds. If a school district within another district's boundaries charges high tuitions, it creates an obstacle to choice and a form of discrimination. Public education's goals are equal opportunity. You are our representatives. You must support our opportunity for free public education. As I said, I live in Portland in a neighborhood called Collinsview. Riverdale School District has reached an agreement with the Portland Public School to purchase the old Collinsview School and site their high school at this location. My children will not be able to attend this public school in my neighborhood without paying over $8,000 in tuition. Portland Public School has been wooed by short-term dollars and has given away a valuable asset in my neighborhood. We can, however, benefit from this if we, with your help, can legislate open enrollment policies and the opportunity for free public education for all. We must have the choice for a public school to operate within the boundaries of my district. We must have choice. For a public school to operate within the boundaries of my district and charge such a discriminatory tuition goes against Oregon's efforts to equalize the per-student spending throughout the state. This situation also harms both the hosting district and the neighboring district, as affluent, talented students may be attracted to a special school that has smaller class sizes. Because of the ability to charge exorbitant tuitions, lower-income, equally talented students will not receive the opportunity to attend an excellent school within their district's boundaries. This is not what Oregon's public school system is about. If 75% of a public school's population pays tuition, this is not a public school. It is a private school poorly disguised as a public school. Please take a stand for free public education, which supports open enrollment. Amend this bill, if needed, to ensure that we will all have access to public education within our district. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you. Hi, my name is Michael Shealy. I grew up within 2 miles of Collinsview School. My wife went to Collinsview School. I went to Stevenson School. We met at Capitol Hill School, most of middle school at the time. My children are now attending Capitol Hill School. My grandfather and my father all went to Portland schools. I'm very proud of Portland schools. I feel that my children are getting a much better education now than I did in the 70s. One of the reasons they're the great things about their education and the education for all Portland students is the choice. They have the choice. I choose for my children to send them to my neighborhood community school. It's part of my community. I love it, they love it, and I'm a big supporter of it. Some of my neighbors choose to send their kids across town to immersion schools. They have that choice. It's a great choice. Some of them are in Japanese immersion, Chinese immersion, arts immersions. Portland is doing a great job at giving our students choices and opportunities. With this high school, it's going to be a great high school, I'm sure. Wilson High School, where my children will most likely go, unless they choose to go to another school. When I was a high school student, I had one choice. I could go to Benson Tech or my local high school. Now, children can go to any high school in Portland. This Riverdale High School will be an excellent high school. And for the right student, it will be the right spot. It'll be nice and small. You'll know all the teachers. All the teachers will know them. They'll know the students. But if you want to play in a marching band, it's not going to be a good situation for you. You just need more students for that sort of thing. The problem with it is it's in my backyard, and it's in the backyard of all Portland students. And they don't have the choice. My neighbors, North Portland, Northeast Portland, Southeast Portland, unless they're paying $8,000 in tuition. And I just don't feel that's fair. And if it's going to be there, we need to find out a way that it can be equal and fair for all the children. And the Portland School District will say, well, it's going to help all the children because we need the money. Well, in our neighborhood, the city of Portland said, make your plan. What do you want your neighborhood to look like? And our neighborhood goal was that that building would eventually become a community center. And here we are in this neighborhood. This building is 100% occupied. It's not a money-losing venture for the city of Portland. OHSU runs a program there that educates Portland kids and kids from the whole metro area. Columbia Academy is a private school where people who didn't want to attend public schools could send their children to. This deal is basically putting Columbia Academy out on the street with nowhere to go, and they're dropping enrollment. It's basically forcing them out of the business. There's so many options for this property. As you all know, Portland real estate isn't getting any larger. This happened in a matter of 6 months. With a little time, we could come up with a much more profitable situation for this property that would benefit Portland students for a much longer time if this school doesn't go through. So I hope that you will amend the bill. I'm in favor of the bill, but I would like to see some more amendments to it to help out in these situations. Thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, if I can add another piece of background.
Please.
The proposed Riverdale High School is intended to eventually house or support about 300 to 350 students. Riverdale has said publicly they expect about 50 to 75 of those students to live in the Riverdale School District. The rest of the student body at Riverdale, let's say 300 students, 300 of the 350 students will be non-Riverdale students. Of that 300, under the current agreement, only 75 of the 300 can be Portland students. And they can only attend if they pay private tuition, even though the school is located within the Portland School District physically. We would like to seek a solution that would allow this public school located in Portland to be open to Portland students somehow. There are a number of approaches that we could suggest. I don't know that any of those solutions will gain the support of Portland. I think there are probably some that Riverdale might support, but it's very complicated. And with your indulgence, I hope that we can work with you and your staff and other members of the committee to share with you some of the ideas we have about making this a more fair situation, still allowing this agreement to go forward. One way approaching it is the whole tuition, whether it's appropriate for public schools to be charging tuition to three-quarters of their student body. There are schools that charge tuition. Dufour in Senator Perioli's district charges tuition to a handful of students. And I think there are some legitimate cases where that is needed. But where you're charging tuition and allowed to charge tuition to three-quarters or more of the student body to operate the public school, I think that raises some statewide issues. And that takes that whole component, takes this out of a local control realm, in my mind. I think there are some state principles here.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm done.
Senator Farioli. Those schools that represent Beck Mansion are boarding schools.
Oh, is Dufour a boarding school?
Well, I don't know if Dufour is a boarding school, but the two schools, the first one's the...
Crane
and Cove and a couple of others, we just did the one in the last legislative session for Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens in our schools is they lose critical mass, they can't keep the doors open, and it's one of the ways that they end up maintaining the school is taking students from throughout Oregon that come, but they board. And if there is a tuition agreement, it's certainly not the same circumstance you're encountering in Portland.
I think there are legitimate circumstances.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Mr. Chairman, to
absolutely
represent back, because I wouldn't want to do anything inadvertently that would interfere with the ability of those schools to stay open.
Nor would I. And the language we've crafted in the past has intentionally exempted those sorts of situations.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, we're working on an exemption for everything east of the Cascades. We even thought up of a new name.
I'm happy to answer. This is more complicated. I haven't had a chance to visit with all the committee members, but I will, if it's your pleasure, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that before this is scheduled again for a work session next Tuesday.
We will be bringing this back potentially for amendments. I can't say that I personally can encourage you with your amendments, but I won't discourage you from bringing it to the committee.
You give me a chance to make my case or my constituent.
We'll give you that opportunity. We're not going to move to work session today, but my intention is to move the bill. I do think that it's not our intention to stand in the way of the agreement reached between Riverdale and Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're aware of the concerns of Portland,
yep.
And I understand those very much. They are strapped for funds, and this is one way that they receive some funds. We tried open enrollment in another bill, and it stalled, didn't move forward. And I think that's an issue that I introduced and supported, but we were not able to move it. So be aware that we're going to continue this bill until another session, so a work session, and if we invite testimony on it. But don't be dissuaded
from trying.
From trying. And with that, I thank you very much, and ask Dave Barros to come forward. And I believe that's the last witness.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Barrows. I'm here today representing the Riverdale School District. And I apologize, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that I wasn't here when my name was called. I had a long-standing meeting with the committee chair, and I rolled the dice and lost, so I apologize to you. I don't think it brings anything to the discussion today, Mr. Chairman, to discuss what did or did not happen relative to Oregon City But suffice to say that there are two sides to the Oregon City story, and I don't know, it doesn't speak to this bill. Riverdale School District is here today to support this legislation. We are in favor of the bill, the A. Engrossed version. And Riverdale has been looking for a number of years for a location, and there just isn't any land in Riverdale. And previous witnesses talked about school districts having choices, people having choices, children having choices. We agree with all of that. Riverdale just has limited choices. And currently, its high school operates out at Merrillhurst College, but it's not a very particularly desirable way to operate, and that's the reason they have gone to the agreement with the Portland School Board. And I will tell you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, that this is a lengthy and complete agreement that has been entered into, and it involves not only the payments that must be made by the Riverdale School Board to the Portland School District, but also talks about neighborhoods and parking and traffic and fields and fences and everything. It covers it all. Carla Wenzel, who is a member of the Portland School Board, is here today, and I'm sure would be glad to answer any questions or discuss the agreement more fully. I would also mention that the Riverdale School District has currently an open enrollment policy with both the Lake Oswego School District and the West Lynn School District. And as far as Riverdale is concerned, we'd probably have it with Portland, but Portland said no, because of declining enrollments, they preferred not to have an open enrollment policy. So we entered into this agreement, and we cannot take more than 75 Portland school students under this agreement. And we think the agreement is a win-win, that it solves Riverdale's problems. It enhances, as the chair has pointed out, a difficult situation to the Portland School District in terms of funding. It is my understanding, and I have seen the figures, that actually the use of the Collins View School is an expense to the Portland School District today. We would reverse that. Not only would we give them $2.5 million up front, we would convert this school into a very fine building, which it probably could use right now, and we will pay them an annual rental fee for 20 years. So this is a truly win-win situation. Now, with all due respect, Mr. Chairman, my good friend Representative Beck brought all of these amendments to the House Education Committee. And the House Education Committee heard them, discussed them, and chose not to include them in the bill. And that would be our request to you, Mr. Chairman. I see we're going to have a little response to that. And I do, again, Mr. Chairman, I have only represented this client since Friday, so I don't know everything, but I know a lot because I spent all weekend reading about it and meeting about it. We would ask that that you look away from Representative Beck's amendments, which we think clutter the situation and probably put the agreement that we have with Portland today in some kind of jeopardy, because our agreement is we will only take 75 students from the Portland School District. And if, in fact, state law overarches that and takes away this local agreement and says we have to take as many as come as long as we have room for them, that puts us in a serious situation in terms of this agreement being enforceable. So we would urge you not to do that. I appreciate the time of the committee, Mr. Chairman, and our attorneys are looking at this whole thing, trying to finally figure out kind of this end sum game, and we may be back with some thoughts next Tuesday to the committee. We've, as the chair and the others know, we have gotten bonding authority, we're going to be going back out for a revote with the people in May, just to make sure that they understand exactly what they are doing with this specific school in mind. And we're very confident that the voters of Riverdale will choose to fund this particular project. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Representative Beck, do you have a...
Just to
clarification with all respect to Dave, because he truly just was invited to the table, I guess, Friday afternoon on this issue. So he's there. We did try to get some amendments through the House committee, and frankly, I had support from a majority members of the committee, but the chair was not willing to move the amendments. And I think he raised some good concerns with the proposal we were making at that time. But since then, our ideas have evolved, and I think there is another approach to what we proposed in the House committee that does not get into their local agreement. It allows their local agreement to stand and move forward, but addresses some broader principles of state policy. And I'm working with legislative counsel to have those drafted, and would like to talk with the committee about them as they get finalized. So, just for the record.
Thank you very much. Let's extend the testimony.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 2291, and we're going to open a public hearing on this. That was House Bill 2291, and this is open a public hearing on House Bill 3193. We have a couple of people signed up.
Getting a vote on this. I was just out of the phone. I thought you'd call me.
We have one signed up.
Everybody else left.
Oh, thank you for staying.
I'd like to thank the committee for staying. For the record, I'm Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the government relations officer for the Portland Public School District. And we asked Representative Nolan to sponsor the bill before you, 3193. She was gracious enough to do that. She got the entire House Student Achievement and School Accountability Committee to sign on to it. I didn't even have to testify that time. It passed 7-0 by the committee and was put on the House consent calendar and passed on the floor with only one dissenting vote. This bill is very simple right now in statute. School board chairs have a term limit of only 2 years. And actually, it's decided by the boards how long the terms will be, but it can't be any longer than 2 years. And in a school district like Portland, I'm sure you can understand that we just get them all trained up and we get them through a budget cycle or so, and all of a sudden they've got to move on and we have yet a new chair to train. So what we'd like to do is to extend that to at least 4 years. And we at first wanted to take the term limit off entirely, but had a couple of school districts that said, well, we'd rather have some amount of years in there. So we said, okay, we'll have four. So it had no dissenting comments on the other side, no other testimony, and it passed very easily. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Well, I commend you for bringing this forward. I think it's a good bill. I think that local school boards decide who chairs their board by majority vote, and it seems to me appropriate that they do that. It's not a job that many people clamor for. I served 12 years on school boards, and I know the service and the sacrifice that's required, and so I'm very much appreciative that you have brought this forward. Any further comments, questions? I lost one of my members. Is Senator Ferriola?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Close public hearing on House Bill 3193 and a work session on House Bill 3193.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hartung.
I move House Bill 3193A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Hartung has moved House Bill 3193 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
No.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 3193 is sent to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman?
Oh. Go ahead.
Courtesy to allow Senator Fisher to vote. He was in the hall on...
Can we serve, we wanted to serve notice of a possible minority report on this bill that we just did, Senator Deckert and I did, on House Bill 3193.
Senator Castillo has served notice, along with Senator Deckert, a possible minority report on House Bill 3193.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Without opposition, Senator Fisher, how do you wish to vote on?
Aye.
That was on the on Senate Bill 783. So Senator Fisher is an aye vote. Being no further.
Sure. I guess, are you still station? I was wondering if we could maybe possibly have an explanation, or is that out of order? Why?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would like you to remain in work session so we can hear the explanation, please.
All right. We'll stay in work session, hear the explanation of possible minority report.
Sure. For my colleagues, we have a bill that deals with allowing local school boards, and my school board, Beaverton, and others brought the bill, allowing them the ability, if they so choose, to make their schools gun-free zones. And so we've been trying to get a hearing on that bill, and this is, we met with the Senate President, and this is our way of getting the bill to the floor for a vote. I could talk more about the merits of the bill, Mr. Chair, but I might save that for the floor debate.
I think it would be wasted on this. There's no further business for the committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
I have a procedural question to ask.
All right, Dave.
If the bill that we've just been hearing under our committee, if that vote fails, for instance, would there be a possibility of filing a minority report on a bill that failed?
It doesn't go to the floor.
No, it doesn't go to the floor.
It stays here.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to change my vote on this bill to no. And I would ask my colleagues to think very hard about the floor fight over the gun control issues, which are very contentious. And I would ask the other members of the committee to think about reconsidering their vote on this bill as well. This was a issue, I think, that comes before the chairman as a surprise. I don't think he was advised that the members intended to do a minority report on an issue that's totally unrelated to the issue that's contained within this bill. And I guess I feel that's an ambush on the chair and the rest of the committee members. So I would ask my other colleagues here to possibly reconsider their votes and serve notice of a possible reconsideration at a future date so that we could bring the bill back, perhaps with a better understanding of the etiquette of working with the chairman on a bill rather than ambushing the chairman in an open work session. So I would change my vote to no, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I would change my vote to no.
Likewise.
Do we have to vote? Do we have to vote on changing, on allowing, on changing
yeah.
the vote?
Yes. Yes.
First of all, have you dropped the gavel?
No, it's not. We're at open work session.
So then if
it is the majority on changing
people want to change their vote, as long as the gavel hasn't dropped, I think you can go ahead and change your vote without unanimous consent.
Right.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would immediately serve notice for possible reconsideration if I am on the prevailing side with my no vote.
Actually, you're not on the prevailing side with a no vote. You are with a yes vote.
Well, actually, if the no vote prevails, you're on the prevailing side.
Yeah.
Yes.
We change.
If everybody changes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So I would be a no vote.
Maybe we should take the roll call again to be clean.
Yes. Would you call the roll again once more?
There was a statement made that you were not, I feel like we have to say something, because there's a statement made that you were not warned.
I was.
It's my understanding that Senator Deckert had talked to you about the filing of the minority report.
He did just immediately before we held a hearing on this, and so in that regard, what Senator Ferriero said was not true, but I was unprepared to deal with the issue. And
well, Mr. Chairman, in point of fact, you were not told before the hearing. You were told before the vote, which is a different matter.
Well, that's my understanding. Did you?
Mr. Chair, the only thing that I would add, and certainly the will of the committee should and ought to prevail, and however we want to proceed is, I think, is okay with me. We made the decision when we didn't get a hearing on this bill that we're going to bring it to the floor. We met with the Senate President, I believe, a week ago to discuss this very issue with him and just talked about different bills that might be a good vehicle for doing that through a minority report, because a hearing wasn't being held and we thought it was a legitimate issue. We hope that it's done in a dispassionate manner and that it's not done in a manner that would hopefully done with the most professionalism and the most congeniality to our colleagues, and just let an up and down vote take place on the merits of the bill. We have a list, I know there's a list of relating clauses that's pretty wide to get this, and so the only appeal that I would make to my colleagues is that I do think there's a broad enough list of relating clauses in a number of different committees to get this, and I think the decision's been made to try to get this issue to the floor, that if we don't want to do it with this bill, I certainly understand, but I do think at some point we will address this issue, and I guess that'd be my only appeal to my colleagues on this committee is that we might do it with this bill, which is a fairly non-controversial bill, and that was the request of the Senate President that it be done in that manner.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I guess that I would take exception to the idea that with a good heart and collegiality and the spirit of fairness that you can spring a minority report on a chairman moments before a vote is called on a bill. It may have the right relating clause, but it certainly doesn't relate to firearms or gun control or the carrying of concealed weapons on school property, which is currently illegal in Oregon. And I guess I would say that it amazes me that, having been through one ambush surprise this morning, that I'd be in the chairman at the or under another gavel at the end of the day, where and there's apparently an end of collegiality in this building in terms of what people are trying to run on chairman. This clearly is an attempt to go around Senator Minnis, who chairs the committee in which the right bill for this issue and this debate is being held. And that's his prerogative, and I have seen this chairman work in good faith and courtesy and consideration as late as just a few minutes ago with Senator Gordley's bill. He has bent over backwards to treat all members fairly, and I don't believe he gets deserves to be treated with this kind of a surprise, and the fact that this maneuvering is taking place is nowhere near collegial. So I would suggest that, Mr. Chairman, if you'd call the roll, we'll get this business behind us, and then perhaps tomorrow or when other folks can be brought into this question, we can perhaps get a broader perspective on what really is going on here.
Mr. Chair,
I
have to take exception to what has just been said here. There also is another way of looking at this, and that giving members an opportunity to have hearings on bills is also part of this process and a respectful part of this process. And it's my understanding that Senator Deckert and Senator Burdick have been working very hard and in a very respectful way with the chairs and the leadership here to get a hearing on this bill, and it hasn't happened. And there was a discussion with the Senate President about this issue, and so it wasn't like going around people's back. It was a straight on with the leadership about this issue, and so I take exception to this not being very collegiate. I think that my intention is in no way to kill this bill that our chair supports, obviously, and wants to get sent to the floor. We in no way were going to do a gut and stuff with this bill. We were going to simply add another part of legislation to the bill and take that to the floor and hopefully get support for the main bill and the amended minority report. If that had not happened, we definitely would be supportive of the main bill. We know it's something that you support and wanted to send to the floor. So having said that, I'm ready to do the vote.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the comments, but I guess I don't see how the respect and collegiality, which might have been extended to the president, because he apparently got a list of bills that might be subject to ambush by this effort, but I don't know how that courtesy extends to the chairman, who wasn't told of this until moments before the vote was called. So I guess it's a matter of the definition of courtesy and professionality and collegiality, and I still don't think this fits. So, Mr. Chairman, it's...
Call the roll. I would say not to mention, Mr. Chair, not to mention some of the rest of us on the committee that were not privy to either one of them.
I don't know how I vote now. I still know.
No.
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 Hi.
Mr. Chairman, I would reserve the right to change my vote at a future time and ask for reconsideration of the bill. So I'm serving notice of the potential for reconsideration.
Procedurally, that will be up on Thursday's agenda, first thing as a notice of possible reconsideration. It would be up to Senator Farioli at that time to move reconsideration. He may or may not.
Thank you. That's a Senate. The bill failed.